Okay, so welcome to Conscious Living Parents, where we do parenting, partnering, personing, and everything else in between.
Today's topic is mum life, really.
Yes, and with us we've got the amazing Sophie Brock. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us. Before we get started, I'd love for you just to tell the audience a little bit about who you are, what you do, why you do what you do, because we've got some awesome questions that I just know so many parents are going to get so much out of it, but I would love to hear a bit of your background first.
Yeah, sure. Well, I have a pretty unusual job title. I call myself a motherhood studies sociologist, and it's a mouthful, and it's like, what does that actually mean? And I like explaining it in a way to people where if we think about scientists and what they do kind of traditionally and thinking, okay, I've got my microscope and I'm studying something under there to try and find answers out about it. I'm a social scientist. And so what that means is I kind of go out into our social world and our relationships and our community and society, and that's my kind of science lab. And then I study it and I study particular questions, and I'm curious about, well, how are we as individuals affected by the world we live within? And how do we come to shape the world that we live within? So I do that specifically, though, for mums and motherhood. And so that's my area of interest and passion. I got into this area before I became a mum myself, which is quite unusual. Like, a lot of the time people are like a little bit suspicious almost when you're studying motherhood, not being a mum yet.
Yeah.
Like, why are you so curious about this? Which I think, you know, tells us something in and of itself. So yeah, that's a little bit about my background. I'm also a mum to my 5-year-old, almost 6-year-old daughter. So yeah.
Amazing. How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing this. I went straight from high school into uni, did a bachelor's degree. I came across the term motherhood studies in a unit of study I was doing, and we had to pick our own independent essay topics. And the one that I picked was about mothers who actually kill their children, infanticide, right? And this big topic that I was interested in, actually, because I don't know if any of your listeners know the case of Kathleen Folbig. But she was convicted of murdering her babies. And there was this contention around that because she said that it was SIDS. So I had this.
I know the story.
Yeah. And it's kind of bubbled up. And so I was really curious about her story in high school. And I did major work looking at her diaries.
Yes.
So I've been interested in women's inner lives and the way that our society views mothers. Mm. And so when I was doing this research for this essay, I came across this term motherhood studies. And I was like, why haven't I heard about this before? Why hasn't anyone, this not been mentioned in my degree? We haven't really talked about mothers at all. And it just made me really curious. And I've kind of gone down the rabbit hole from there into my PhD. And yeah, so a good 10 plus years.
Wow. I have heard of that that story. My mum told me all about it.
Yeah.
She was super interested in it too. My mind was blown. You know, I won't get into that. But yeah, look into it later on. It's crazy. Well, let's start off with some questions. I'd love to know, what do you find mothers are struggling with the most in this modern day society? What's the most thing that we feel the pressure? Oh, I know personally for myself, but do you find there's some common things?
Definitely. I think, you know, it really depends on context, first of all, and what your broader life circumstance is, right? Mm-hmm. So something that is really useful for us to recognize as mothers and parents and people interested in what it's like to be a mother in society is to know that two things can be true at once. One is we're all connected, mm-hmm. and there are actually themes that are really present across our lives, and I'll speak to them in a moment. And the second is that each of our journeys is really unique and individualized. And so we're kind of doing both in connecting together on our shared experience and holding space and respect for our differences. But in terms of some of those themes that a lot of mothers seem to be struggling with and navigating is the overwhelm, the pressure to do it all, that split between your career or your paid work and trying to bring in income and then trying to be a present mum and trying to be there for your family, the mental load, mum guilt, feeling as though no matter how hard you work, you just can't get ahead, you just can't get it right. Anger is really present but isn't so much talked about in the same way that mum guilt is. And so I think the generally feelings that in some ways a lot of people in society are struggling with in terms of isolation, overwhelm, disconnection. I think a lot of that is exacerbated for mums, and we're carrying the weight of our families generally as well. So I'm curious, how does that resonate with you, or do you feel or have you witnessed similar things come up with mums yourself?
Yeah, definitely the overwhelm, the life balance of, like you said, trying to be present. And I mean, I felt that before as well. I don't see it as like work-life balance. I see it as work-life integration for me. But the anger one really interests me. Would you be able to touch more on that? Because I haven't ever really heard any mums speak about anger around motherhood.
Yeah, which is interesting, right? Because there's a reason we don't hear about it, which is because it's not part of what our social narrative is. Exactly, of what is a good mum. Whereas guilt is, like, we can, because we use humor with guilt, we're like, oh, I've got the mum guilt.
So normalized, yeah.
Normalized, yeah. Which is like, it's good in some respects. We want to talk about how we are experiencing motherhood, but it can be used as a little bit of a shield sometimes.
I think so too.
And as a little bit of a way of saying, well, what if you're not guilty? Are you not doing motherhood right if you're not guilty all the time? Like, what does that mean?
I feel like society makes you feel like that, because I've got a strong opinion on mother guilt that has really helped me the way I look at it, which I can touch on after if you like. But I feel like that when you say that.
Yeah. And so all of this actually stems back to one predominant thing that I'll explain, and then we can kind of get back to anger and guilt. But it comes back to the way that motherhood is socially constructed.
Mm.
So what I mean by that is there is an idea in our society and culture, and that we individually take on, about what it means to be a good mum. Same thing with what it means to be a good dad, what it means to be a good friend, a good
person. Yeah.
A good person, yeah. Like, there's a social script, there's a narrative.
There's a box.
That's right.
Yeah.
There's a box. And, you know, if everyone were to think to themselves right now, well, what does being a good mum mean to me? And, you know, you can like pause the podcast and write it down. And what's really interesting is if we're in a room all together and I had you like yelling out things at me, like, what would you both say are some examples of what you think a good mum should be, or how a good mum should be?
Present and calm.
I was just going to say present, number one.
Emotionally aware.
Available.
Emotionally available, yeah. Fun.
Yep.
Energetic, healthy.
Healthy. Leading by example. Mm. So not expecting anything that they're not implementing themselves.
Yeah, beautiful.
Yep, exactly. And we've got a whole body of over 3 decades of research on this topic of exploring what our society is constructed to mean a good mum is. And out of that are the things that you've just said, including being self-sacrificing, giving, your children come first, right? Mums joke about this in the sense of everyone in this house is looked after, including the dog, before I am, right? So it's this thing of like you are giving, but also you self-care really well. So we know I'm supposed to be looking after myself. So what does that look like? And that becomes another thing that we're kind of failing at or not doing a good enough job at. We're not angry, we're not apathetic or bored by motherhood or resentful or, dare I say, regret mothering or motherhood or wish for life pre-kids and missing life pre-kids. We feel like we can fit within this little checkbox of going, ding, 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 I made all of those things. And another big one with this is that mothering should come naturally. So I should get pregnant naturally, I'll have the perfect birth, I'll breastfeed easily, I'll just know what to do, and I'm this kind of mother goddess, right? And if in any way your experience doesn't fit within that, which it won't because we're not robots, and it's called the perfect mother myth for a reason, then it feels like you're failing in some way, or you might just not be good enough. Maybe you weren't cut out to be a mum. And so, you know, we could spend the whole of our conversation focused on this topic, but it's called the perfect mother myth. And what the research has found is that this myth is everywhere within our culture, and we don't even know it, right? Because we are being kind of trained into this from when we're kids ourselves, around what it means to be a good little girl and being polite and thinking of others and nurturing and all of that. And it is shown in our media, social media, advertising. It's embedded within our culture. So when we become mothers, we actually have all of these pre-rules kind of set without even consciously knowing it, which is really hard. It like buries its way into us, And then what we know from the research is the more that it's buried into us, so the more that we kind of hold tightly on to this is the way it should be, and I'm not doing a good enough job if I can't meet this, the higher rates of our anxiety, the higher rates of depression, the lower our levels of life satisfaction, the more that we struggle, the harder our life is. That is a little bit of an example of what our social narrative of what it means to be a mother is, right? And that doesn't include anger. It doesn't include a whole bunch of emotions. It asks us to be this kind of two-dimensional version of ourselves. And I wonder if I want to pause there for a moment before maybe we talk about anger and guilt and see if that resonates with you or if you have any questions about the perfect mother myth and kind of how it shows up for us.
No, I think you've explained it really, really well.
Yeah. Even judgment-wise, anger isn't just not accepted. It's actually, you know, like if you see a mother smack a child or lose it at their child at the shops, or if she feels like there's immediate like guilt, there's immediate like, well, she's not got her shit together. Like there is no place for a mother to have or show anger in any way, right?
Until you've like
passively, of course, with their partner, but
until you've kind of, I don't know, done some of this work. Like now when I see a mum get really angry or lose it, like I just have so much compassion. Like that mum is on the edge. I bet she has not had a break. She's had no one hold space for her. She hasn't had sleep. Like I just feel so sad.
No, I'm talking society.
100%. Society, yes, definitely, for sure. Yeah. Yes. And it's sad that it's not spoken about it because then mums feel so much guilt and shame. So they suppress it and hide even more and exclude themselves even more and then just carry that guilt and shame energetically. Their kids would feel that. Like it's just
Although even that, I know we're talking about mums, but that is not allowed in any sex,
that's
really.
So true.
Like, you know, I don't want to hijack this onto males, this conversation, but there's like men are not allowed to feel anything actually at the moment. They're very confused.
Yeah,
you've touched on so many important points there. I think the first is to delineate between anger and violence. And anger and aggression, because they seem to be conflated, right? And we think about it in our minds like, oh, an angry person is an aggressive, violent, harmful person.
So true, hey.
So it's like, well, actually not necessarily. Like there's a difference between the felt experience of anger and the expression of that anger.
Yeah.
And what happens when we aren't modeled or and we don't have adequate support in how to process our anger in healthy ways, it can come out in really unhealthy ways and aggressive, harmful ways, right? But they're not the same. And also anger, as you've just said, anger is gendered. So we're allowed to feel anger in particular ways according to whether we're a man or a woman and how that is seen to be expressed, right? Mm-hmm. So there's all these rules, there's all these social rules. And what it does is that it actually increases feelings of anger in motherhood when we're told we're not meant to feel them.
Yeah.
And there's this thing called, it's a concept I've developed called the anger guilt trap. And how it works is that when we are living within a society where we have this idealized image of the perfect mother myth, of we should be self-sacrificing, we should be all the things we started listing out and plenty more, it asks us to self-sacrifice and put others before ourselves. Now, when we're doing that with our children and with others in our lives in a way that is self-sacrificial and depletes us, we end up getting to a space where we are emotionally overwhelmed, we're exhausted, we've given all that we have to give and we don't have much left, right? And so we can get to these places where as mums we feel burnt out, we're struggling, we're overwhelmed, we're not supported, we feel like if you have a partner that your partner doesn't get it or isn't able to understand how you're feeling, you can feel really isolated and alone. And these feelings are really hard to share with others unless you have safe spaces and relationships. Because in some senses, admitting to them is admitting that you're not the perfect mm-hmm. person. And what happens then is if we move along in this, and I've got a graphic that I can give you to attach, it's a diagram, is if we move along in this circle, we get to a place where we will get a trigger of some sort. Now, that trigger could be your partner making a comment. It could be getting a text message that you've got a bill that's overdue. It could be your kid tips their porridge upside down on the floor, right? Doesn't really matter what the trigger is, but there'll be a trigger, and that's the little snapping point, the boiling over point. And that's when you, inverted commas, lose it, right? And there's a whole bunch of science that we know here about what happens to the brain, in your brain actually going offline, and you become out of control. And this is where anger can become dangerous and toxic. We hear about, you know, mum rage, the impact on our children, the impact on families of feeling like you're walking on eggshells because someone's about to blow. That's when it can be really unhealthy. And what happens after that, you feel incredibly guilty, right? And something to say here too is the guilt doesn't necessarily come from an unhealthy expression of anger. Lots of mums feel guilty just for feeling angry. They won't necessarily do anything, but they're just a bit sharp. You're a bit irritated. You're strapping the car seat in a bit too tight. You're just a bit wound up. And then you feel terrible, right? And you think, oh, the guilt overwhelms you. I should do better. I should know better. My kids deserve better. I'm not good enough. And what happens is this is a critical point at which we can use our guilt for growth. We can use it to start making changes, or we can use it to shame ourselves. And if we go the route of shaming ourselves, we go back into the perfect mother myth and the cycle actually continues. So that's how it's kind of all connected together.
That's so cool, so insightful. And I suppose like any emotion, I've been just having more awareness around guilt and shame and how much I don't welcome those emotions in and I push them away. But anger is just another emotion that we should welcome in and allow ourselves to feel.
Yeah, it tells us a lot of information, you know. I know I've experienced it. Like when I'm really angry, I can get really clear about what I think and feel and set boundaries. Like, nah, I'm not having this anymore. Like, that is it. You know, I've reached the end of it. And so it can be really useful, and it tells us a lot about how we're feeling, and we can move with it, as with, you know, emotions in lots of ways. We don't want to
shine. Yeah, I don't think it can be. It is extremely useful. If you pay attention to it, it tells you exactly where you feel you've been wronged, where your boundaries are being crossed, where you're feeling victimized. It is an essential, like core, you know, like core colors. It is a core emotion that if you're not in touch with, it's really hard to feel balanced and to feel happy, right?
And to move through it.
Yeah. I think as well, what you just talked on as well, something I hear a lot in our clients or my clients specifically is, on top of that anger, if you're being told that you've got a great lifestyle, you've got a great, you know, like if you're a single mom with three kids, like, yeah, you deserve to feel like you can be like, people accept that. But if you're in a good home and you've got a good job and your partner's quite caring, it's like, you should be grateful for this. You should be great. And it tops up as well, and it makes it even harder to feel like I'm not a shit person because I feel angry or guilty, right?
Definitely. Or like, yeah, if you've got a supportive partner and you can go on date night and the next day you say you're struggling or you're tired, it's like...
then you're a horrible person.
Yeah, like, oh, try living in my shoes. It's like they don't allow you just to have your experience no matter what situation you're in.
Yes.
And the friends of mothers who do that, they're like,
you have so much more help than me, or like, you know, you have this or that.
And even generational, like I watch my mother go, I can't believe your wife needs another massage, you know, like, and it's like, do you want her to be as miserable as all the ladies from your generation? Like, it's great that she can touch in and communicate that I need a break, right?
Yeah.
Like, we don't want that resentment.
100%.
A big word that you've both touched on and used there is the word should. And so this is the root of the perfect mother myth, is how we should be. Mm. And so whenever we're living in a space that is the gap between our expectations and our reality, that's where a whole heap of pain is, right? Because I shouldn't be feeling this way. I should feel better. I should know more. And when we should all over ourselves, we can't ever actually even be in the present of our experience, right? We can't, because we're always pulled away. And that comparison piece that you've both mentioned there is really important. Because how all of this functions is not only through the guilt. So it's not only that shooting on myself of I should be better, I should be more, I should need a break, but it's actually we police each other. So this is how the social construction of motherhood and patriarchal motherhood continues, because we have to keep each other in line, and that plays out through comparison. So, I mean, this is how it functions. This is why hopefully conversations like this can start to break some of those chains. compassion for each other.
Oh, it's so crazy, the world of motherhood, isn't it? Really.
And society.
Society, like, yeah.
Being a sociologist is such a it's so beautiful, but it's you can get down on the overall effects of society on people, right? From outside in, not just inside out.
We can all relate to it because we all experience like that pressure that we put on ourselves, the expectations we have on other people. We do put other people in the box. We compare, like everyone, I think, is guilty of it.
Yeah. Well, what's helpful is if I think about it, as in us having this conversation and your listeners listening, pretend that you've just gone to the optometrist and you've picked up glasses with a new script. It's like you've picked up a new way of understanding yourself and the world, recognizing that there's this thing that exists outside of you, society. And yes, it can be a way to lump a whole heap of blame and we're like, the world, what is wrong with the world? Like we can get kind of negative on it. But we can also go, actually, this is really useful information because it makes it less personal.
Yeah.
When I'm struggling, like it's not my fault. It's not just about me, but I do also have capacity to make a change. And when I engage in those judgments of other people, okay, well, actually, what if I were to question that? And when I'm judged next by, you know, my mother-in-law who says, well, imagine you have it easy. We had it hard in our day. All right, well, let's put that new script, that new lens of glasses on and go, well, maybe it's not so much about me. I don't have to let this land as sharply.
Yeah. I love just getting curious on everything, hey? When you think new information comes in or people say things or you have your own thoughts, like instead of shying away from them, it's like, oh, okay, why do I feel like that? And get really curious. Always makes it a little bit more playful.
So much better.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is the phrase shooting on yourself, is that yours or is that something that's out there? I've never heard that, but it's so good.
I've heard that before. I don't know who came up with it, but shooting on yourself is
so good. I don't know if everyone picked up on that, but it's like that's going to be a new phrase I use. You're like, for sure. I like that.
Yeah, it's useful. I'm bringing humor and play, as you said, like going, you know what? We don't have to take this so seriously. Like we can find ways, and I do this, you know, even with our kids, right? They're genius at it. They will bring us into the present moment like no one else.
Yeah,
and you know, they can show us. There's this quote from I think Anne Lamott. And she said that if you need a reason to yell, your kids will give you one. So in other words, they will pull it all out of us. Like we can't escape ourselves when we're parents. We're forced to kind of sit with this stuff. So let's play with it. Let's move through it and see what can come out from that.
They're our biggest teachers, aren't they?
That's right.
You can't run from your kids. They will find you. I'd love to touch more on just back to the guilt, because I feel like that is definitely the most common thing with mum. And it is so normalized. And yeah, you're right. Mums do kind of make fun of it. Like, oh, mum guilt, everything. Like, it's normal. But like, I don't know, like, yes, I've definitely experienced it and there's moments where it pops up, but I'm very quick to catch it because I've said this before, I think on a podcast, but our dear friend Katie Dean, she said to me when I was experiencing it years ago, and she said, guilt comes from when you think what you're doing is wrong. So next time you feel guilty for going to the gym or guilty for having a date night or guilty for needing time out to recharge your batteries, ask yourself, is that wrong? And every time it pops in straight away, I'm like, was it wrong? And no, that's not wrong. That makes me be a better mum. And for me, I don't really feel mum guilt anymore, but then I feel not ashamed, but I don't vocalize that a lot because it's very triggering for other mums. Like, oh, they almost think you're a bad mum because you don't feel guilt. Like, oh, you're selfish because you go to the gym and do this and that.
Or judging them for feeling guilt.
Yeah. It's such an interesting thing, whereas I'm like, I want to talk about it more because I feel like it can help so many other mums not carry that weight of the guilt. They don't have to carry that. They can do all the things they love to do and enjoy it without the guilt.
Yeah.
It's possible. And then,
well, even more so, the even more triggering conversation next up from what you're talking about is helping them see that the guilt that they're feeling is actually serving them more than letting it go, so that the guilt is more useful for them. And that's a really scary conversation to have. I have it in with clients all the time, especially martyrdom. You need this martyrdom more at the moment than letting it go. And it's like, no, I don't. And then we break it down. It's like, oh, damn it.
Yeah.
Damn it. Yeah. That guilt really is serving me. Shit.
Yes.
But at least it provides a line in the sand, right? Like, okay, like, and now I can do what you do. Like,
yeah,
it's a marker. Yeah, there's so much again in what you've both just shared. What you've said there about the advice your friend gave you in and asking about essentially how is that guilt serving you? I've got a model that I teach in motherhood studies, and it's called the guilt guard. And so if we were to think about, like, on our shoulders, we've got on one side there's like a little, like a devil, which is like has a guard uniform on, and they're like, you're a crap mom, you're the worst, you should feel guilty, you're terrible. And then you have on the other side a little guard that actually works on behalf of our values. So the little devil guard works on behalf of the perfect mother myth, patriarchal motherhood, and the other one works on behalf of us. And sometimes guilt is useful. Like, there are some things that I've done as mum that I'm like, yeah, you know what? The guilt is really warranted here. Like, I was living outside my values. That's not how I want to be as a parent. Mm. So what can I do to shift that? But what really robs us of that opportunity is when we lump all of the guilt together and we're like, oh, well, this is just what it means to be a mum, and guilt is part of it. And it gets us really stuck. And so when we talk about guilt serving us, it can serve us in the way that it helps us connect with what we really want out of our lives. But it actually also serves society, right? Because if we have a whole bunch of mums that are shooting on themselves, that are feeling inadequate, that are feeling guilty, well, it keeps us disconnected from each other in a sense, because we do that comparison thing. Like, you need to suffer as much as I suffer, because that's what this motherhood thing is. And it also keeps us berating ourselves with that stick of the perfect mother myth, right? If all mothers woke up tomorrow and were like, you know what, screw all of these rules that I've been told about how I'm meant to be as a mother, let me get some support, some coaching, some support with a therapist, some group work, and figure out what I actually want in my life. What is evidence-based information about what is actually good or not good for my kids and myself? And let me sort of design my life here. Like, let me design what are my values, what's important, and we were to let go of the rest of it and see it for what it is. Well, we'd have way more presence, way more connection, way more agency, way less self-deprecation and self-criticism. I mean, that's ultimately how we change the world, because we can then parent from that place of presence. So I think guilt, as you've both identified, is this really powerful emotion that can be used for our own self-destruction, or it can be used for our own self-connection.
That whole thing you just said on, I love all of that, but other mums wanting other mums to suffer? I've never heard it being put like that. That's really sad.
It's sad, right?
But it's real. Can you feel it? Like, they don't want them to hurt or suffer, but I'm going through this. Like, yeah.
I'm trying to reflect back to think when I felt like that, but I don't know.
Yeah, okay.
I'm thinking of my friends, like, when I've had a bad night, I hope they haven't had a bad night too. I don't hope they've had a bad night with me.
But, you know, like, when your cup has got low,
yeah,
seeing other people and appearing like, oh, they've been out having a you know, or like resenting your husband.
I was going to say, maybe it's more relatable to Steve. Well, he's had a great night's sleep. I'm like,
that's what, yeah. It's a similar thing, right? Yes, it's not a vindictive thing.
No,
it's a,
yes.
That's how I see it. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, it's absolutely not. I mean, look, in some, maybe it's vindictive. Yes. I don't know. But, I mean, it's not a conscious thing. So this is, again, how social theory plays out. So this is actually related to a model called the Panopticon. It's by, like, Jeremy Bentham's a philosopher who originally came up with it, and then Foucault talked about it with Power. And to break it down in a really simple way, everything I've been talking about in this episode relating back to the perfect mother myth, like, if everyone were to just imagine, and I use an example of a fish tank because I like visuals, but if I were to think of, like, a round glass fish tank, that represents our society, and the fish swimming around inside are all us as individuals, and for the sake of this conversation, mums. And written on that tank all around are all of the rules of the perfect mother myth that we've talked about. Like, you should do this. It's all of the shoulds. So we don't really know we're within the tank. We don't know we're swimming within the water until we have consciousness about it, which we all do from this conversation, right? And when we start to have consciousness around it, we start to see things differently and think about how we're treating other fish in the tank. So if I'm swimming in a particular direction and I've connected with other fish or other mums who are, like, similarly swimming in the same direction, we're like, hey, we've got each other. Yeah, this is how it's meant to be as a mum. And we see other fish swimming in an opposite direction and, like, ramming their little heads into the tank and banging on things and making a change or being different. We're like, what are you doing? Like, did you not get the memo on what the rules are about what a good mum is? Like, who do you think you are? Yeah. And it can be kind of disruptive and confronting to see people do things differently. And so, you know, it's a complex model that I can't fully explain here, but it's just to normalize what you've both said and to say this is a function of social theory. It does play out. And that's why comparison and the so-called mummy wars can exist. But there are also ways in which we are our most powerful allies for each other as mothers. And we don't all have to be swimming in the same direction to be able to connect and support each other.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. It's the same as, like, you know, like we can be taught to put ourselves down or whatever, because if you talk low or you disown your, you know, like if someone says, I'm really proud of this, the natural reaction is for in society is for us to bring that person down a little bit. If someone says, I'm so hopeless at this, da 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 da, the natural reaction is to pop us up. So it's like this, I see it very similar in regards to how that judgment sort of happens, right?
Yeah. Or feeling bad for not feeling guilty, as you said, actually. Like, it's a sense of, oh, well, I feel a bit, you know, when you see other people suffering as well, like we're empathetic as humans, you know, we want to be able to be authentic to ourselves, but we also want to build connection with other people. Yes. So it's this, I mean, balance is a terrible word, but it's this kind of navigation, this dance.
Yeah. You kind of feel separated from the tribe, I suppose, if like everyone else is feeling guilty and you're not. This makes you want to lean
into your target.
Yeah. Yeah, makes you a target more for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And where do you see, like, from a, like, obviously you're looking at things from both ways, but I've noticed you've said the word patriarchal society a lot, but so society on the way in versus person inside out, where do you see the balance and where do you, like, obviously I'm guessing it's more like society creating the way that people feel, but where is the middle, or not the middle, but where does self-ownership and et cetera take over or have influence over society, or does it at all?
Yeah, $1 million question. I mean, the connection between this is almost goes back to a little bit like the nature nurture debate, a bit of going like, how much control do we have as individuals over our lives versus how much are we shaped by our context and the outside world? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But what I do know is that, well, what I believe from my training as a social scientist is that we can't actually be fully separated from context and culture. Like, we can't actually jump out of that fish tank and be like, I'm exiting, see you later. I mean, some people try to in terms of living separate to society in some way, and we can certainly exit systems. Some people choose to do that. But I think that there's an intermingling. And so when we're looking at what does it look like to take agency over our lives, we need to look at individual factors like your temperament, your sensory preferences, your personality traits. We need to look at your history. How did you grow up? What was modeled for you? How were you parented? What were your relationships like? And then we also need to look at these social factors, which is where the majority of our conversation is centered upon. But once we're able to kind of see these different parts that exist and see ourselves as connected to each of them, we can start to go, well, okay, where is my agency within this? How can I do things differently? And sometimes when we start to explore this work, it can feel kind of really big and overwhelming. It's like, well, if this is a society issue, I'm just one little person, like, what am I supposed to do about it? And I would say that actually sometimes the most empowering kind of revelatory things that we can do are super simple things like, oh, I'm not going to get up and finish unpacking the dishwasher right now because I feel tired and I want to finish my cup of tea. Like, it can look like really micro decisions in your everyday life. It can look like setting boundaries. It can look like having conversations with key people in your life. It can look like going out and seeking support, coaching, therapy. It can look like shifting relationships. It can look like a lot of different things. But something that a key maternal scholar, Professor Andrea O'Reilly, has talked about is she said, as mothers, we can mother against motherhood. And what she means by that is that if we think about this fish tank, right, and we're in the society, we're not going to be able to change it overnight. But actually, what we're doing every day as parents is having a huge impact on our children. how we work on ourselves, how we support ourselves, how we come into connection with ourselves will have ripple effects for generations to come. It's not our responsibility to solve all of that or to fix the world or to whatever. We can't do it all. But actually coming back to ourselves and being really gentle on ourselves, finding those places where we can think, how would I like my life to look differently? And what's one next step I can do towards creating that change? That's within our power. You know, we can do that while acknowledging all of the rest of the social stuff that exists. Does that kind of speak to or answer the question you've asked?
I think so. So I think what I'm hearing is, although like obviously society is a huge influence on how we've, you know, learned to behave and our parents and et cetera, the solution you're offering is, the solution has to be inside out. It has to be self-action and has to be manipulating your own environment, you know, like et cetera. And then through each person doing that, we now influence the future society. And so future generations get a different pressure, which will obviously have different benefits and different, you know, cons or drawbacks from that as well. And then we move ahead and we go, oh, we've overcorrected. Now the different mums will be, and parents will be like, okay, no, we do not need to do that. We need to do this. And then we slowly, so it's an inside out thing, but your solution is, it starts with me still.
It's an inside out thing because there's actually, like, we are society. Like, society's human beings, right? Like, it's not, we have institutions, but who runs them? People. So it is an inside out thing. But in saying that, we can't, I mean, look, maybe someone would challenge us if you're like an activist who is really motivated, but I'm like, we can't individually as one person change the entire social construct and our culture. But it is an inside out job. But I would say a way to think about it is seeing inside of yourself what you've taken in from the outside.
Yes, becoming aware of it.
That's right. You can't change what you can't see or acknowledge. So, like, that is honestly the biggest step, is just seeing it within yourself and being like, where do I shoot on myself? That's it, you know? And then, you know, things, we don't have to try so hard, you know? It's okay to just take this really slowly, and the change will come as you evolve.
Yes. Yeah. I'd love to chat more on mums and careers, because I feel like so many women are so torn, and even I still have moments where I'm just like, even on the weekend, I was like, I get confused sometimes. So I just like, I want to be at home with my kids all the time, but I love my work. I love making impacts, and I love being able to wear different hats, and that pull to be able to do both. And I love my balance and integration of it all. But there's moments where I'm like, oh, do I need to be more over here? And it's hard to want to do it all and to try and fit it all in. And some mums I feel like are so confident, like, no, I'm not working, I'm with my children. And I always get a little bit envious of that, because I'm like, I should be like that, being a mum, shouldn't I? There's the shoulds again, like, well, what's wrong with me? Like, am I not a good enough mum because I want to be with my kid 24/7? I don't want to be with my kids 24/7. I need a break. I love filling my cup up doing other things and being with my friends, my work, and on purpose with other things. But that pull is really, I find it really hard.
Yeah, look, you're not alone. I think this is one of the biggest.
I needed that.
That's all we wanted. Thank you. End podcast.
No, you're not alone.
It's the validation, right? And I mean, in your description there, you've mentioned, you know, comparing yourself to other mums and what they may feel or what they may think about. And so, you know, we place ourselves, how do we place ourselves? Well, through looking at others and be like, where do I fit in? Where am I on this spectrum? What I would say about this is that we're set up to experience this challenge. Mm. It's not because you have or haven't done something, or you've not designed your career to be family friendly, like whatever it may be. There's lots of variations of this. But if we take that social scientist lens and we draw back and we kind of look at us all from a macro perspective, what has happened is we've got the perfect mother myth, which is all of the good mother stuff, self-sacrificing, right? That's how you be a good mum ultimately. Everything comes before your kids. Then you go over the other side of, if we think about this like a diagram, or we go over to the other side of this, and in our broader culture and society, we have an individualistic ideology. I'm trying not to get like too wordy because I know this has been a big podcast. And so listeners, I'm conscious too, these are like some big new ideas and wanting to take things kind of slowly to integrate. But we live within a society in capitalist Western societies where essentially the idea is you work hard, pull yourself up by the bootstraps, work hard, you'll make it to the top, hustle, grind, do it. Like there's this really like push mentality, right? And that is sort of tells us you get yourself to the top, you work hard and you get there. And that is in kind of direct competition, like it's opposite to what we have told to us about how to be a good mum. So is it no wonder that we become mums and on the one hand we're like, oh, I'm supposed to put my kid before everything else and be present all the time and do all of this good mum stuff, and I'm also supposed to be like exceptional entrepreneur, business owner, employee, climb my way up the corporate ladder. Like they're actually in tension. It's not only that they don't fit well together, they're actually in opposition. They harm each other. And so many mums are stuck, and we talk about the juggle and we talk about putting on our different hats. And some mums have an easier time of doing this than others because they might be very career oriented and they might not be as invested in the perfect mother stuff, right? Or vice versa. They might be like, this season of my life, I have capacity to be at home with my kids and this is what I'm fulfilled at. But we know from the research, most mothers, the majority of mothers want to be primary caregivers for their children. Most mothers do want to be present and actively involved in their children's lives over work if they had to pick. But we also know majority of mothers want to engage in paid work or have a career in some way. So that's kind of the picture of where we're at. And this can go seasonally. You may want to be at home with your baby for the first 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, then that may shift or vice versa. So it's really important, I think, for us to, we've got this dichotomy of stay at home mums versus working mums. Like a lot of that is actually false. That's socially created. Yeah.
So true. I do feel like I live both well, but there's moments where I'm like, even on the weekend, I'm like, no, I think this would be home with my kids. And I get into work, I'm like, I can love this. Yeah. Like I wait to get home to them and I get to enjoy both. And why can't I enjoy both? But I suppose society does make you feel like you're either over here or you're over here.
Yeah.
It definitely creates conflict and it drives a lot of you're using a lot of deep terminology, a lot of things I'd love to delve into a lot further, but I'm not sure it's the right space to with this conversation. But it's amazing to listen that you're considering all that in regards to how you're creating these programs, right? It's not it's just mum guilt. It's like, no, there's lots of layers. Depth and layers. And I mean, I'm hearing things there where it's like, you know, has the Industrial Revolution, etc., been a net positive for women and on a general positive? Like there's so many layers of this, right?
There's a lot of layers.
Has their body become commodities and all these things because of, it's quite interesting.
It is. And once you start diving down the rabbit holes, you start realizing how complex things are. And there's a freedom in that actually, because it can be very overwhelming depending on where you're at, but it can also be really eye-opening and make it much less personal. And you can see the ways in which actually, you know what, a lot of what I'm going through and what I'm experiencing is really normal. It's really actually predictable. But then what can come up is the anger and the rage. And that often comes when I work where they're like, what? This is so unfair. And so I think something I just say for listeners to hold on to when thinking about this particular sphere of the work-life stuff is to embrace the phrase of both and. Like both and. I do not have to pick one or the other. I'm allowed to love being home with my kids and I cherish every minute and this is the best thing ever. And oh my God, get me out of here. I'm about to walk out the door. You know, I can feel so fulfilled my career and I can want to give it in. We're allowed to feel this complexity. And I think the more that we can open up and normalize that complexity, the less rigidity we feel, the less stuck we feel in it.
Yeah, it's like with emotions too. Like I remember when I was pregnant and I was so great to be pregnant and I fucking hated being pregnant. I was so tired all the time. But you complain about it, it's like, oh, you're so ungrateful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then if you say you have a perfect pregnancy, it's like, oh, you don't know what it's like. It's like, can't hold that duality.
Yeah. And then you have to start every social post with this literally paragraph of, I'm still feeling okay right now. I'm just having a ramp and I'm okay. I don't need, literally, you know, that, you like, yeah, have this. Sorry, it's like a minute that in, you get to talk about what you're after.
Just be real. Yeah.
Yeah. It's also what you just said at the start of the podcast. Two things can be true at once, mm-hmm, and we can have a nuanced position on something, but we can also, you know, rather than just, if I'm for mothers raising their kids at home, that doesn't mean I'm anti-mothers
exactly
working in the workforce, right? We can be, definitely, we can be allowed to have both,
because that's breastfeeding and formula. Hey, it's breastfeeding, similar,
formula,
yeah,
dummies, no dummies, yeah, oh, everything. But
100%. It's all dichotomized. It's all, we put on polar opposites, and that's what we're trying to.
And then go fight in the middle. But so, in our community, that mother, like the work,
yeah,
mother versus the home mother, I see a lot of very highly, like, it's very triggering, that conversation, right? Like, don't tell me I'm doing wrong by doing my work. Like, and there's so much the shooting on each other's,
yeah,
based on other people's opinions. Like, how do we, what is the solution to that? Like, is there
And I'm saying that too. I just feel like in my experience, it's so easy to compare. And the more you're looking for outside validation, outside answers, yeah, the more confused and blurry it's going to be. It's like when I actually get really grounded to myself, like what they say, like, doesn't penetrate because I'm so clear on what I want to do and I love wearing all my hats.
Yeah.
But there are moments where you're going outside, yeah, overwhelmed, tired, going outside for, yeah, answers. That's when it, yeah, you get stuck.
It's so hard. It's so hard. And I look, I think that all of it is in the context of when we're trying to make these decisions, we're thinking about, well, what actually are our options? Like, what's my financial option here? Like, yeah, can I go back to work part-time? What does that look like? Okay, yeah, well, what's going to be, I mean, we know in Australia, one of the groups that is raising the highest kind of levels of poverty and homelessness are older single women, right? And so when we're thinking about having huge career breaks, you know, superannuation gaps, I mean, these are huge social issues.
Yeah.
And I think too often we kind of get thrown at women, well, take, you know, have better childcare subsidies, go back to work. And it's like, but it's really hard because this is a complex topic and that's not necessarily what women want.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think us being able to have conversations that put our children's interests on the table, families' interests on the table, women's interests on the table.
Society's interests on the table.
Exactly. And sometimes those interests will be competing and they'll be in conflict and intention. And look, I wish I had a magic solution to say.
That was my next question. Well, what is, like, it's clear that you can see where the issue is.
Yeah.
How do we get so much value brought back into, this is how I see the biggest issue. Like, obviously we've moved to a point where men and women are almost the same or equal, and we've gone away from the differences because we've become very individualized rather than community and family and et cetera. And how do we really, like, value the crazy importance of bringing up new humans but providing that stability and not, you know, because we don't want to go backwards to where you're at home but you've got no security, so you just get abused and you don't get any rights. How do we make that some, yeah, sort of, is it a, like, I don't know, what is it?
Well, I'll preface my response with, this isn't my specific area of expertise. Like, there are plenty of people who are, you would need to talk to, like, economists, like feminist economists. Like, there's lots of people that actually need to be at the table of these conversations.
Yeah.
But from my perspective, in what I've witnessed and experienced, I think part of it has to do with paid leave policies. I think part of it has to do with parental leave, paternity leave, but also making sure that the mother baby dyad is also protected, particularly early on. So the mother baby relationship. So in other words, saying that actually we're not equal. If you've given birth to the baby and you're wanting to protect and nurture a breastfeeding relationship, yeah, that relationship's going to look different, definitely, to father baby and father mother relationship if we're talking heterosexual relationships, yeah, here. I also think, though, we need changes in what it means to father and the value that we place on men in children's lives, I think we also have to value caregiving more broadly, yeah, right? We know that we're, you know, giving billions to the economy every year and it's not counted as part of our GDP. We see that in the devaluing of industries like nursing, childcare, teaching. So I think that it's actually a really, really big issue. And it can be hard for us as individuals in our families to navigate what can this look like. But I think bringing in policies that actually support freedom of choice, support, you know, I was a single mother from when my daughter was a few days old, right? And I was like, oh no, what am I going to do? What's my career going to look like? I'll create my own business. That will give me flexibility, right? And so like trying to figure out basically as individuals, how do we make decisions in the context of our broader culture, context, and economy? I mean, these are big, big topics, but hopefully through conversations like this, we might be able to make some headway because it needs to be both.
Definitely. Yeah. So much to talk about. But
yeah, I shouldn't have asked. But, but to bring it back down, each person starting and just going, I'm not observing my mother guilt. I can start with me and I can start to, you know, observe when I'm shooting on myself. That's a great start point.
I think people as a start point, so a couple of things I'd recommend after listening to this episode is one, go outside, put your feet in the grass, have a look at the sky, ground yourself, connect back in outside of yourself, because a lot of this stuff is really intellectual. And it needs to be, because that unlocks new understanding, that creates paradigm shift. That creates change in our everyday lives. So it needs to be, but we need to get back to the body and our outside world after diving into this space. And the second thing I would recommend is when you have some space and some curiosity, some won't, but probably if people have listened this far, they do. Like sometimes like you can be really attached to the perfect mother myth. And so talking about unpacking it is actually a threat to people's identity. It's like, what are you talking about that this could be, you know, this could be disrupting my life or this could be bad for my children. You know, we haven't even gone down that road of research yet, but, you know, there's that as well. But write out a list. A perfect mother should. A good mama should. A good woman who is a mother should look like how should she look? How should she behave? How should she think? Write it all down and you'll get, you know, at least 20, 50 items on there. Like it can be a shock actually when you realize how much you've internalized. And then out of that list, go through every single one and question it and be like, do I really believe this? Do I
like you do with the thing? Is
that wrong? Yeah, 100%.
Is that wrong? Like, do I actually? And for any that you're like, you can just cross off, for example, a good mom wouldn't let her kids jump on the couch. Do I really care about that? No, I really don't. I'm just going to cross it. Like who cares? Whatever. You know, a good mum shouldn't give their kids packaged food. Do I really care about that? No, I don't. Like there are some things you can actually cross off. Some you will tick because you're like, no, I really believe that. Like I really believe in having a screen-free household. Like that's really important to my values. Like whatever it may be, there'll be some things that are important to you. Mm-hmm. So tick them. And then the things you're unsure about, circle them, because you might need to talk about them with someone else. So that's kind of just an exercise you can do to get yourself going.
I love that. I do that something similar too with like certain beliefs that I've had over the years. Like I don't know why this one came to my head, but growing up, like people with tattoos are bad people. And then as I started to grow up, like, and I wanted my first tattoo, it was kind of like, oh, hang on. And I had to get really curious and like, where did it come from? That people with tattoos are bad. They're people from jail. And I asked my mum and she'd always been like, you know, you're not a colouring book, don't put tattoos, blah, blah, blah. And then we unpacked it more and it's her mum that had told her people with tattoos are bad. And and then my mum's got tattoos now, I've got tattoos now. But like once you start opening that question up, like, yeah, do I believe this? And where's this actually come from? Where did I hear this? Yeah. Did I just hear it from someone at school, a teacher, whatever? And how much truth that might be their truth and I totally respect that. But is that my truth? No, actually, they're not scary people. I really like tattoos. I think it's artistic, you know. Yeah. So you can do that with all different topics around motherhood, but really questioning it. And you're right, getting grounded and just having some space to yourself to actually think deep on this stuff, because we get so distracted with life and with our kids and with being busy and what everyone else is saying that it just gets really noisy. But when you're grounded with yourself, you can actually unpack all of this and get some clarity around it, which then you can feel more confident in your decisions and not so guilty or pulled from what society says is right or wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. Ultimately, all of it, like the whole purpose of what I do here in having conversations about this stuff is to unlayer all the stuff that's been put on us and get back to our connection with ourselves. I mean, that's ultimately.
And I know you love visuals, but I always think about that as like an onion, right? You're just peeling back the layers to get to that core. That's what I feel with my healing journey and things I'm learning about myself is like more layers. Or me and Steve, and we're navigating something, it's like, oh, I thought we'd heal through that. Nope, there's another layer. Here goes the onion.
Yeah, and being so gentle with ourselves to sometimes be like, I've been peeling so many layers of this onion. Like, it's like, it's also okay. Like, we don't, you know, we've got plenty of time here. Like, just take one step at a time. It doesn't have to be big and overwhelming.
It's not an end destination either. This is a journey to go on. And with every age with kids, how many kids you have, different phases and seasons in your life, you're going to have to navigate different beliefs and new things that come in and new things you read and hear about. Like, I'm sure today, even mums and dads listen to this will be like, oh, that's challenged a lot of things I thought, that's showing up for me or how I've been playing out. Okay, cool.
Is there a potential conversation starter, or let's say a mum is listening to this, she's like, damn, like, okay, I think I need some help at home, or I need, like, is there a first step in regards to, you've given some beautiful ideas in regards to starting with me, but often the hardest thing is that barrier of how do I now ask for help, because that's going to be hard. Like, Is there a technique you use or something you can give that can, or is it just like, just lean in? I don't know.
Well, I would say that you know yourself and your relationship best. And so think about how you'd answer that question for yourself, knowing, I'm assuming you're talking about partnerships and having a conversation with a partner or
partners, workplaces, anything. Just it's like, you know, like obviously we can get unstuck within ourselves. Like those three tips you gave are amazing.
What next?
Yeah, like how, like I'm guessing the people you work with, this is a very common, very huge next step where it's like, okay, you're feeling guilty. Now we need to find space in your life where you can, you know, either have better boundaries here. How do you have that conversation? Because that's hard for a lot of mums and a lot of people, right?
It's really hard. I think I'd say a couple of things there. One is that oftentimes in what I've witnessed anyways with clients who have navigated this, there can be times where when you start to change, those around you also change in response. So thinking about your relationships and your families and communities as like this ecosystem. And sometimes when you start actually making some shifts, some things around you start shifting without you necessarily trying to orchestrate that. Mm. The second thing I would say, though, is that sometimes this work does bring up relationship conflict. So it depends on where you are and what sort of support systems you have. So then when we're trying to change whatever is the norm, it's a level of disruption.
Yeah.
And sometimes that does, well, I believe the people who come into connection with this work, if they're feeling called towards knowing more, then that disruption is worth it because it's coming back into a truer way of living, right?
That's lovely.
But it can be hard. It can be hard. But I would say as a gentle way is rather than asking for change or coming at it as a boundary setting conversation, which probably it ultimately is, coming at it from a lens of curiosity and compassion to share what I've been learning, to share what I've been realizing about myself, and inviting in a question of, what do you think? Like, what did you think being a dad was going to be like for you? Like, how is it different to what you thought that it would be like? Or, I mean, it's a bit trickier with workplaces because there's like so many different examples here. But I know clients as well who've had conversations with employers about this and thinking like, what were your expectations when I came back to work? What would that look like? So I think navigating it with a lens of curiosity and compassion for others about what they may be experiencing can be that little opening point for connection to then go, well, what do I need? You know, what do I need and how can we support and meet each other here?
Yeah, beautiful.
So good.
Love that. I feel it's like we've been talking for 3 hours.
Yeah.
I recognize
version two.
I know, maybe a part two, because it's been such a beautiful conversation, so much awesome insight. And I think a lot of people might feel a little bit not triggered, but like, wow, I haven't looked at it like that, or that's showing up for me, or that resonates. And now not to run away from it, lean into that, we encourage.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think people like normalizing some reactions is sometimes triggered. So sometimes being like, well, who do you think you are to say this? Again, like, I don't know if you would get the full way through the conversation if you fully felt like that, but maybe, but also normalizing that that's okay to feel like that. Yeah. And this could be for everyone, you know, it's really not. Yeah. There are plenty of people that like the way that their motherhood is works for them and their family. And that's great. That's fine. We're not asking anyone to change here. We're looking at how this lands for ourselves. But also a lot of people feel really validated by this. I am not alone. This is not on me. There's nothing wrong with me.
Yeah.
And actually there's this whole new way of thinking about myself and my life experience that is really intriguing and exciting.
I love that resistance too, though, because I feel like that's such a beautiful mirror. Like if I ever feel super resistant or like close off something, I then that curiosity, like I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. What have I been telling myself this whole time that's right or wrong, or where have I heard that? Because I shouldn't feel so much resistance. Like I want to be more open to it. So if you do feel that resistance, like that's okay. But once again, get curious about why is that like putting so much turbulence in your nervous system right now?
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. Exactly.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. I mean, I was looking on your website and you have a course, which is so cool. Like for mums that might not have support around them, or maybe this is the first time they've heard any of this kind of information, might be new to them. You've got a course that really dives in and gives strategies and tools and so much more information. Can you tell us a little bit about the course?
Yeah, so I have some self-study courses for mums on topics like unlayering from the mask of motherhood, which is this perfect mother myth stuff on anger, the anger guilt trap that I mentioned as well. I have a podcast called The Good Enough Mother, and so it's kind of, you know, layers of this conversation that we peel back kind of in greater depth again. And then I have a training certification. So it's for people who work with parents. And what's interesting is most people come into it for professional development to get trained in all of the stuff I've mentioned and the theory behind it. And they're like, we're doing this for professional development points, and it's like continuing education. But then we find that actually it is personal development first.
Yes.
Right? We actually need to do it for ourselves first.
That's always.
Always the way. It's like, is there no way to hack through that and just get to the side?
Yeah. You wouldn't be interested in it otherwise, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. That's the thing. So, yeah, it's like a journey that I take people through. And as you said earlier, it's an unlayering process that continues. But what's so exciting and rewarding for me is seeing people take in and go on this journey, and actually there is also a other side to it. You know, like I want to also kind of say it doesn't always feel this way. Like we can get to a place actually where, like, I similarly, solidarity, I don't feel much mum guilt either.
Yeah.
That I recognize the hesitancy in saying that. Like we can make significant shifts in our lives, and it's possible and it's exciting, and we're in this together. You know, you're definitely not alone.
Beautiful. Love that. And I suppose I'm guessing you've got an Instagram as well that people can connect with you.
Yeah, Dr. Sophie Brock. It's all on there. You'll find me. The internet nowadays, right? We just Google.
I know, so cool. We'll pop all your details in the show notes below as well for anyone that's interested in connecting with you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. Amazing conversation.
Love to do a part two one day.
I'd love to. Thanks so much for having me.
Awesome. Thank you.